This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3778 for Wednesday, the 25th of January, 2023. Today's show is entitled, A Squirrel Being on Google Products and Google Security. It is hosted by ZenFloater2 and is about 20 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is I made a being podcast about Google products' interoperability and their lousy security.
Hello, boys and girls from ZenFloater, your favorite magical forest squirrel. Former human being converted into squirrel by aliens in the 1960s. An atheist. With another podcast, mainly because, they're screaming at us and beating boards on the concrete saying we got to make podcasts. So, well, let me tell you about my Google world. You know, I've got these Chromebooks. I'm recording this on a Samsung 310 Chromebook, which is a really nice little Chromebook that reminds me of the Dell Mini 10. You know, it's so small and tiny, and it's got a battery life of over 10 hours. Anyway, I love the Chromebooks. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about Android phones for a second. I can use an Android phone's Wi-Fi hotspot with T-Mobile to get on the internet and post shows like this while I'm out and about visiting relatives. Anyway, I was down in Texas and my phone started acting kind of funny, so I decided I'd erase it. You know, like you erase a Chromebook. I basically did a factory reset on it. Problem is, Squirrel didn't remember that they have two-factor authentication with Google, and it all goes right back to your stupid phone. So I couldn't log into or create any new instances of Chrome, you know, install them on Linux or log into Gmail, let's say, on Firefox. Couldn't do that without the phone. I did manage to turn off the two-factor authentication on at least the Chrome side to allow me to, you know, install Linux distributions on this one laptop and install Chrome or log into Google, you know, with Firefox that way. But it wouldn't allow me to just enter my password because each time it asked, I need to verify who you were at, and we're going to do that through your phone. So I asked it to send me a text message. It wouldn't even do that. Wouldn't do anything. It locked me out of my account. And as I was locked out, I became angry with two-factor authentication because I started thinking about it. You know, I realized that this isn't so much about security as it is about just them making sure that you always have an Android phone. You know, and you don't get rid of that Android phone. That Android presence is always with you. And it started to piss me off. Anyway, the way Google's got stuff set up is you can turn off two-factor authentication on the Chrome side, but that's separate from turning it off on the Android cell phone side. It's like two separate switches. So anyway, I traveled the day after to another Texas town. And sometime around 10 or 11 in the morning, I tried to log back into my Android phone again, you know, get my Google account activated, and it let me do it. Surprisingly, without a text message, no verification, or any silly nonsense. And I thought, well, this is just crazy. What kind of security is that? So basically what they did was they locked me out of my account for a day because I factory reset my phone as punishment for doing it, I guess. I don't know. It certainly wasn't security the way they let me back in again, but I'm happy I got my phone back. But you know, the two-factor authentication just flat pisses me off. And I realize that you know, the security aspects of it are important. But you know, the way it was handled, you know, I was reading a website about it the day I actually reset the phone and realized I screwed up, that it would work if I went home and got on my own Wi-Fi with the phone, because it realized that phone had been through my home Wi-Fi to receive updates and stuff, and so it would let me log back in. They said that right on the website. But they didn't mention of me going to some town like Conroe, Texas the next day from the Dallas area, and all of a sudden being able to log in from whatever cell tower it is they have down there. Isn't that weird? And you know, I've never been there before. So how does it know it was me? I don't know. Maybe it was the fact that I had the Samsung 310 Chromebook with me and I was using it through the hotspot that it detected that, oh, this must be the same guy, because the Chrome authentication is just as strong as the Android. Anyway, it pissed me off that Google decided that they weren't going to provide a switch or a button that would pop up on your Chromebook saying, hey, would you like to log back into your cell phone? You know, it's always one way from a Chrome browser or a Chrome netbook, Chromebook. You have to authenticate against the Android phone, but it's never you on an Android phone having to authenticate with a Chromebook. You see what I'm saying? In other words, they could send this authorization code to my Chromebook as well as they could the Android phone and have them both covered, don't you think? I mean, wouldn't that just be common sense? But anyway, they don't have any option to do that, apparently. They have no option to do that. And it really freaked me out when they wouldn't send me a text message with their 6-digit code on it. You know, I can understand why you don't get a pop-up saying, did you log in, on a phone that's not logged in itself. You know, it's been erased. But you can send a damn text message. Anyway, it wouldn't do that. So the whole thing pretty much pissed me off. I was rather unimpressed with the security. And I felt like two-factor authentication is basically just another way of them forcing their market hand with Android phones. The other way that I see them forcing the hand with Android phones is the QR codes that are popping up all over in grocery stores and at government offices and places like Pepsi and Coca-Cola and whatnot. You walk into a building and you need to know what to do. There's a QR thing that you can scan. In fact, I saw a rental car that had a QR code stuck to the windshield on the inside that you could scan with your phone. It would tell you about the car you just rented, you know, your budget car or whatever. But anyway, there. That plus my doctor's office just recently went with a software company called Helio. H-E-A-L-I-O. And they've got an Electron app that is in the Play Store. And that's how I get my doctor's diagnosis and orders and communicate with the pharmacy now. So, I mean, they're really getting to a point where next thing you know, I'll be voting for Bush or Biden, Trump or Biden, using some damn app from Google. You know, it's going to be just that friggin' crazy. So I guess they're going to get it to a point where if you lost your phone or your phone became disabled, basically you were a dead man walking. So anyway, I'll get off that subject. Today is rambling squirrel day, and I will post the highlights of my complaint session. You know, humans get to complain all the time. Squirrels should have the right to complain as well, don't you think? Don't you agree? So anyway, let's talk about Easy Tether and using Easy Tether to access your cell phone to use Alma Linux or Fedora or a Ubuntu-based product or Debian. You know, one of the major distributions to use an Easy Tether driver, even FreeBSD has an Easy Tether driver where you can get cell phone speed to, you know, like grab an ISO through RTorrent, you know, a torrent file, or watch a movie, for instance, or a video that has a higher bandwidth than they offer on your stupid Android hotspot phone. You know, it's funny, but they try to, if I use SSH to go back into my OpenBSD server, all of a sudden we don't get this 5 to 6 megabit per second bandwidth that we do through Google services. They show great favor over the cell towers to Google servers, but apparently the cell companies, they won't let you communicate with your own private server much past 200 or 300 kilobots per second. You know, it's deadly slow, even with easy, as they throttle it. In fact, if you're using a Tor, I noticed they do the same thing. They'll throttle it down to about 300 kilobots per second, even with EasyTether. And of course, I've said the Wi-Fi hotspot on T-Mobile is just pathetic. It's like 80 kilobots per second. There's a lot of videos you can't even play using a Wi-Fi hotspot. You can play a lot of YouTube stuff and a little bit of BitChute, but not much else of anything. And I was just sitting here thinking, with this bandwidth hungry as these Chromebooks are, it's funny, but when I started doing some major transfers to and from Google Drive using one of my Chromebooks through a relay that I set up with a Fedora and an EasyTether driver and made my own Wi-Fi hotspot, I found that these Chromebooks can really throw files up to and down from Google Drive. I mean, if they see you're communicating with Google Drive, oh, you can get 10, 11 megabits per second bandwidth. I mean, it's jaw-dropping. You can get the whole Slackware CD in like 3 minutes or less, you know, that I've got stored out on Google Drive. It's jaw-dropping, the performance that you have if you're going to Google as opposed to anyone else. You know, even BitChute or Rumble or any of the other sites, they get throttled compared to YouTube and Google. And it's such a lopsided thing. And you'd think that Google had so much power over our cell phone companies that and I'm just going to call them this, the silly bastards, because I'm angry at them. And I'm getting angry at the whole Chromebook thing. I'm angry that they have these Android phones, but they don't have a way to allow a Google Chromebook to obtain that sort of bandwidth through the phone. We have to go through this silly little modem. And that's just a pile of crap. You know, it blows me away. I can sit there and watch it suck down 5 and 6 megabits per second watching an HD video on YouTube through the Android phone, but yet obviously they've got to throttle and complain and bitch about me doing SSH over a server that has only a 1 megabit per second connection up, or no, actually it's 2.5, I'm sorry, 2.6, something like that, megabit per second up and down on the OpenBSD server. Hell, it's got to cut that down to 250 kilobits per second. You know, why doesn't Google have their own EasyTether that'll work through the USB or work through the Bluetooth or even the Wi-Fi of their own damn Android phones that allows Chromebooks to obtain the bandwidth that one gets when you're using Android on the cell towers, the cell frequencies? Doesn't that make you wonder? And I understand with the new 5G phones, it's no different. I mean, they have basically the same policies they're going to institute, even though you'll be on 5G and it's got like 100 megabit per second bandwidth in some areas, you're still only going to get 80 or 90 kilobots per second through the stupid Wi-Fi hotspot. Isn't that just piggish and stupid? And it is. It's how they're going to do it. Because obviously they want everybody in the planet to communicate with Google servers through our cell phone networks, and only using an Android phone. You can't use Chrome OS, you can't use Devon or Debian, or Alma Linux, or anything else, OpenBSD, can't use anything to communicate through that network other than a damn Android phone or an iOS phone and to Google properties. That's it. That's the only time you're going to get that sort of bandwidth. Folks, it's utterly insane. In fact, it got to a point I had to transfer 20 video files about OpenBSD. I wanted them on my laptop. And here's what I did. I logged into my I did an SSH to the OpenBSD server that I have at the house while I was out on the road. And I found the 20 videos I wanted, put them in a file folder. And then I had rclone upload those to the Google Drive that I have. Which it did in, you know, 5 or 6 minutes. And then from Google Drive, I took my Android phone and downloaded all 20 of these videos one at a time, because you can't do file folders on the stupid Android app, you know, in Google Drive. It's one frigging video at a time. Got it at a good bandwidth, you know, each one of them transferred down in a minute or so, and they were pretty good sized video files. Then I just tethered the Android phone to a Linux powered laptop, and I turned, said okay to, you know, file transfer for the MTP file transfer, and I transferred them off of the phone onto the hard drive of the Linux laptop. I couldn't do it directly from the damn server, which would be more efficient, of course, than going through Google Drive. But it was the only way I could get the bandwidth to get all those files in, say, less than a day. I mean, their policies are crazy. And, you know, I'm surprised that we as a nation are allowing them to basically take over our airwaves. You know, we grant them a license to run these cell towers. They don't own the damn airwaves. We grant them privileges to use those airwaves to put their cell towers up. We should be telling them how they're going to run it and manage it, period. And to have it all biased toward one company for just Android services alone, it's like when I look at Google, when I look at this Chromebook or a Chrome installation on, say, Devon or something of the Chrome web browser, I see one company, okay? When I look at Android, which is also a Google product, it's like I'm looking at another company. And the two don't get along with each other. They don't cross-communicate, they don't interoperate at all. I can't get the bandwidth on the Chromebook that you get on the Android phone because it's not allowed. I mean, they keep effing it up. And I can't authorize a login on an Android phone from a known established Chromebook with good credentials with Google, which is insane. That's insane. They don't even have an option to do it. Every two-factor thing that they've got points right back at the Android phone that was affected, that was reset. Isn't that just insane, boys and girls? Anyway, I'm just in a tizzy about this. I thought I'd make a video about it. Other than that, I just wanted to tell you, I've been goofing around with various Linux distributions. And I don't want to trash Geeks, but I just tried the Geeks 1.4 install CD on a Toshiba laptop and got about halfway through and just died. So I restarted it, tried it again. Same thing, got halfway through and died. That's with picking the GNOME desktop. So I guess I'll try again today or tomorrow with the XFCE desktop and see if I can get Geeks installed. But their installed DVD is really buggy, but I did want to try it and see how they're doing. I haven't used it in over a year. And I also thought I might try downloading Magia and installing that and see what Magia is up to. Because, you know, Magia is almost like Fedora in that, you know, they'll have the latest, most modern kernel in there and software. It's Magia is almost like a rolling release, where their actual release cycles, like when they go from Magia 8 to 9, which will happen soon, they're just changing their little control center where they allow you to set up Samba servers and stuff like that, you know, your time zone and all that NTP stuff. You know, just their control interface. But to run Magia, as I recall, is like running a rolling release. By the way, you can't get an easy tether driver for Magia at all. The last one they made was for Magia 6, and that was quite some time ago. It doesn't seem to work with the Magia 8 at all, so there's probably some fix for that. But anyway, that's all I had. I just wanted to touch base. And, you know, the seasons, the holiday seasons. Hope everybody's had a good holiday season. And that their hibernation has been going well for the winter. I haven't been doing much hibernating. I've been traveling a little bit. the weather here in the Gulf Coast states, Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, New Mexico, has been warm. It's been in the 60s. On a couple days, it's practically got up to almost 80 degrees. There's no sign of winter. I can't remember the last day it was below freezing, even in the early morning. In fact, this morning when I woke up, it was, I think it was in the 40s somewhere. So anyway, we're certainly not going to have any snow or ice this winter. If we do, it's going to be a freak. Anyway, I thought I'd just post this to you as my squirrel beating session. You know, I can't use the real words, the real human words, so I'll use my beating session, which is, you know, like Bumblebee, of course, for squirrel complaining. Bye for now, everyone. Have a pleasant day. Love to everyone from Send Flood to the Squirrel.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.